Today's episode is brought to you by the Nuance Dragon Ambient Experience, or DAX for short. This AI-powered ambient technology helps the physician be more efficient and reduce clinical documentation burden, because we all need that. To learn more about how DAX Copilot can help reduce burnout and restore the joy of practicing medicine, stick around after the episode or visit nuance.com/discover DAX. That's nuance.com/discover DAX.
Knock, knock, hi. Knock, knock, hi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Knock Knock Eye with your host, me, Dr. Glockenflecken. This is your one-stop shop for all things eyeball-related. It's really not a one-stop shop. I'm not going to give you all a glasses prescription or do your cataract surgery, but if you're wanting to know, have any kind of knowledge base around eyes, I'm your guy. This is where you want to be on your commute or in bed reading, or not reading. I hope you're not like, maybe you're reading a transcript of this. I don't know. Do we have transcripts? I think we do. I don't know. Check my website. I just show up and record. That's all I'm here for. We have an interesting topic today. We are talking about retinopathy of prematurity. This is a topic that's been recommended to me several times by different people. I got one of our patrons over on Patreon has suggested this topic, and I'm happy to oblige. I can't say I'm happy to oblige because let me give you some context around this topic, okay? Pediatric ophthalmology is a whole different world within a whole different world of ophthalmology. Like, you know, ophthalmology to most people in medicine is on an island in the middle of the ocean. It's so far removed from civilization, from medical civilization. And then it's like on that island, you have this security compound that only few people are allowed to come in. And those that do come in are the only ones that understand what goes on in there. That compound is pediatric ophthalmology. There's other compounds. There's a neuro-ophthalmology compound as well. But the point is, it's pediatric ophthalmology within ophthalmology is so hard. It's very challenging. When you get into strabismus, when eyes are going different directions, and then you're talking about surgery on different muscles around the eye that pull the eye in like three different directions, and it's mental gymnastics. It's a whole different way of thinking about ophthalmology. And the thing is, everybody who goes through residency, we have to do some pediatrics. So it's not like, you know, you can do internal medicine or you can do pediatrics. I mean, people do both. Med-peds, that's a thing. You gotta be crazy smart to do that, I think. But and so it's definitely not separated. So when we're going through training, we're doing all the different subspecialties, including pediatrics. So I did, I think, two rotations on pediatrics, probably a total of 3 months, something like that. Just doing peds, and it's on our board exams. Now that doesn't mean we have to see kids in practice. Now I do see kids. I don't see a lot of kids because we do have pediatric ophthalmologists in our practice. And so I'll mainly see kids that come in, just they have some kind of urgent eye issue and they get added onto my schedule, and I'm happy to do it. In fact, I kind of like it. I wouldn't want to do pediatric ophthalmology because I'm not a huge fan of strabismus surgery. And you got to do a lot of that, but I do enjoy like helping a little kid. They come in with their family and the kid's always so cute, and you get to be silly. That's the thing. That's an underrated part of being in pediatrics, I think, is because some of us, we just kind of have this somewhere in our hearts, in our souls, we want to be silly. We want to just act up. We want to be strange and say funny things in funny voices. And I don't know. It's just, some of us have a tendency to just want to go in that direction. And it's hard to do that in adult medicine. When I see my patients who are 80 years old and have macular degeneration, it would be weird if I started talking to them in a funny voice out of the blue. But if you do it with a four-year-old, everybody loves it. It's fun. You can do magic tricks. You can do magic tricks with some 80-year-olds, I think. But the effect is greater with kids. And it's just, you get to show that side of yourself that you lock away because of adult interactions of that, where it's not socially acceptable to be funny and crazy and strange and use funny voices. And so I absolutely see the allure because I have a part of that in me. And whenever I see kids in my clinic, it comes out. I loved that part of pediatrics. I loved interacting with the kids. It was very fun getting to examine little kids. Some of the things they do in pediatric ophthalmology is very difficult. One of those things is treatment and monitoring and exams for retinopathy of prematurity. So, and this is like within the fortress of pediatric ophthalmology, there's like a sub-fortress of retinopathy of prematurity that not even all pediatric ophthalmologists do. In fact, this was an area that going through training, going through my pediatric rotation, it really wasn't a part. I maybe went one time with one of the fellow to see patients in the hospital, in the neonatal ICU or the NICU or whatever. That's neonatal ICU. Yeah. So I would go with them and I didn't even do the exams. I was just watching. Because it's about as sub specialized as you get. And well, so I say all this just to preface this conversation about retinopathy of prematurity, because I am by no means an expert in retinopathy of prematurity. I am not a pediatric ophthalmologist. That being said, this podcast, this episode is not for other ophthalmologists. This is for just everybody, whether you're in medicine or not. You just want to learn cool things about the eye. And so I do have that level of expertise for you, okay? And we're going to keep it. I'm going to get into some specifics, but we are going to kind of keep it, you know, like we do with most topics on these Knock Knock Eye episodes. We're going to keep it fairly basic so everyone has a chance to understand what's going on. So I'll do my best. Actually, I put a little work into this to really make sure that I knew what I was talking about and didn't say anything wrong. If there are any pediatric ophthalmologists or pediatricians or ophthalmologists who hear this, like, oh, you didn't, that is not correct, please, by all means, like, get in touch with me, email me, all right, knockknockhi@human-content.com. Send a message to me on social media, tell me where I screwed up, and on the next episode, I will absolutely retract any statement that you want me to retract. I listen to feedback, okay, as long as it's constructive, and as long as you end whatever message by saying I'm the greatest person on earth. That's all I ask, you guys. So anyway, retinopathy of prematurity. So I'm just going to give you first just a two-liner type of like, what is this disease? This is a disease seen mostly, there are different risk factors for this. It's mostly seen in young gestational age, so less than 30 weeks of gestation, and low birth weight infants, less than 1,500 grams. That's another risk factor. So small preterm babies, okay? They're born before their retina vasculature, all those blood vessels that start growing into your eye, and they vascularize everything and allow everything to work perfectly. Well, sometimes babies are born before that process finishes. So all those blood vessels, what they do is when they start growing, they come into the back of the eye, the very back part, all right, the back of the retina where the fovea is, where the macula is, and then they spread out from there and innervate the rest of the retina. Well, if a baby is born too soon, All right. That process hasn't finished yet. And so it's not quite there. You have areas that aren't vascularized yet. And so that is retinopathy of prematurity. And there can be lots of stages of this. There are things that can make retinopathy of prematurity worse. There are ways to make it better, to treat it, to keep it from causing permanent blindness. This is an enormous topic. And so that's why that we're solely focused on this, right? I'm not going to talk about other things. So that's basic retinopathy of prematurity. Let me take a quick break, and then I'm going to give you a little history lesson about this disease. Kristen, we got to talk about the Recess Tailor.
Tell me.
Oh, they specialize in these custom EMS bags.
Yes, and they are as obsessed with organization as I am, so I love everything about
this. It's amazing. You've got one for emergency surgery.
That's right. Here's emergency airway.
I got one for major trauma and diagnostics.
And this isn't even all of them. There's so many.
When you open these up, there's a spot for everything, for splinting, for wounds, for meds.
It's all labeled.
This is I could see how helpful this would be.
Yeah, when you're in an emergency, maybe the light's not great, conditions are not great. It's just open it up. You know exactly where everything is. Just grab it and go.
Absolutely. To get your custom medical bag, go to therecesstailor.com. That's the RESUSTAILOR.com/KKE to get your custom bags. Knock Knock I customers receive 15% off their first order. Okay, so this is fascinating, and I'd heard this the history of this, years ago in residency, but I went back and I read a little bit more about it in preparation for this. So ROP, I'll just call it ROP from now on, because retinopathy of prematurity, that is a mouthful, you guys. So ROP, that's what I'm going to refer to it as. First described in 1942. And at the time, it was the leading cause of blindness in kids in the United States. So this was a pretty big problem. And there are three distinct time periods where there was a large incidence of ROP. All right. The first one was right after it was described. So 1940s to 1950s. And this was primarily driven by the use of supplemental oxygen in babies who are born, especially preterm babies. All right. They just slap on an oxygen mask, give them all this unmonitored, unregulated, just blasting these babies with oxygen. Turns out that causes damage. Having a large oxygen environment in the baby, in the bloodstream, can damage those very fragile capillaries in the retina. And can cause worsening of ROP because the fetus is in utero is in a hypoxic state, all right, in contrast to after birth, right? So it's generally a little bit more hypoxic in utero. And so if a baby is born prematurely, all of a sudden they're exposed to the world with all this oxygen, all right? And then if you have protocols in place like they were in the 1940s and 50s, where you want to just give just a whole bunch of oxygen, try to get that baby to cry, to breathe, to pink up. All right. Baby comes out a little blue, you pink them up, you get that oxygen going. Turns out, that might help save the baby's life, but it also had a tendency to worsen significantly retinopathy of prematurity and cause blindness. And so we figured that out, all right, sometime in like the 50s, 60s, 70s, somewhere around there. And there were new protocols in place that regulated the amount of oxygen. And this is when I got to shout out those NICU nurses. My goodness. They're so protective over these little babies. And that's because you got residents like me in ophthalmology who come in like, I'm going to do some retinopathy or premature. And they're like, no. Hey, you're going to stand over there in the corner. All right. We'll trust the the board certified pediatric ophthalmologist to come in and do it. But no, you're not getting anywhere near these babies for good reason, because of things like this. Now they have protocols in place regulating the amount of oxygen very specifically. Like, these are very tightly regulated types of things of management of these preterm infants. And so, that helped. All right. It really brought down the amount of ROP that was happening. And then in the second big upswing in ROP started to occur in about the 1970s. And that was because our technology in medicine had gotten so much better that we were starting to see babies or be able to save babies who were born earlier and earlier and earlier. So all of a sudden you got little infants who are like, 35, 33, 30 weeks, even under 30 weeks, who are able to survive because of all the advances that we've had in medicine. Well, that's a huge risk factor for retinopathy of prematurity, because we already talked about those vessels in the retina. They haven't finished developing. And so we started to see a lot more retinopathy or prematurity around there. And then the third big epidemic actually started happening in communities and countries around the country and underdeveloped countries around the world who were just kind of lagging behind the U.S. in terms of how they managed preterm infants and use of oxygen. And so it was like the same thing that we went through with unregulated oxygen, and so we started seeing a lot of that around the world, and then eventually they caught up as well. And now I talked a lot about this use of oxygen. That's not as big of a problem now because of the protocols we have in place, because of all the work that so many people have done in trying to figure out exactly how much oxygen you can give to make sure the baby is healthy, but also without damaging those little capillaries, those really small, very fragile blood vessels that are in the back of the eye. So the oxygen thing, we've got that under control, but now, well, we still have babies who are born very early, less than 30 weeks of gestation. And so that is a huge risk factor. I already talked about low birth weight. That's another risk factor. So now we have to deal with this. And so the general, as far as the pathophysiology of retinopathy of prematurity, there's a lot we could go into. I'm going to kind of not really, partly because I don't quite understand all of it. There's VEGF involved. There's vascularization of different parts of the retina and when they occur. And but basically, when a preterm baby comes in and is born early, ophthalmology gets involved. All right, we get those NICU consults. Not me. I don't. I've seen maybe one, and not since I graduated residency, because I'm not a pediatric ophthalmologist. And so what we'll do though is when we go in to see a preterm infant, there's a very strict diagnostic criteria to determine that baby's risk of having severe retinopathy and prematurity. I guess what I should do? Let's go through like the different general stages of this disease. All right. So when we look at the eye and examining a preterm infant, you might think, oh, that's really hard. It's really not that hard because they're not that strong. Infants are incredibly weak, you guys. An adult could easily overpower one. It's very simple. No, they get swaddled, and then and so they're immobilized in a swaddle. And then we have pediatric speculums. So speculum, y'all probably know what a speculum is. At least half the population does, but it keeps tissue open, right? So it's a pediatric speculum, just like, you see in like the Clockwork Orange. People always use that example. It just goes under the eyelids and just pulls those eyelids open. Well, we have little tiny ones that are for babies. So we'll put the speculum in the eye. We'll dilate the patient, and usually that involves ordering the drops from the pharmacy, because this is all happening in a hospital, right? This is hospital based. This is high level of care type of stuff, because we're talking about a NICU for the most part. And so we order the drops. The NICU nurse, the wonderful NICU nurses, will administer the drops. So by the time we get to and I'm going to say we as a general, just do ophthalmology. By the time we get to see the patient, the little baby, the eye's already dilated. All right, so we put the little speculum in, and you get a beautiful view of the eye, because otherwise the eye is generally pretty pristine. There may be some other issues with the eye if they're very, you know, maybe a little bit of cataract in some cases, but generally you can get a fairly decent view to the back of the eye. And so we're looking for where the vascularization is, or where there's how far anteriorly in the eye those blood vessels go, looking for areas of avascular retina where there are no blood vessels. And then in the later stages of ROP in a premature infant, it can lead to a partial retinal detachment or a complete retinal detachment. That's like worst case scenario. You look back there and you see the retina has detached. And again, part of that is just because partly being born into a high oxygen environment, but also when you're born early, it arrests that normal vascular development. And so we look at the eye and determine where in the retina the problem is, what it looks like. There are certain terminology like demarcation lines and ridges and extraretinal fibrovascular proliferation, basically blood vessels that are not just on or in the retina, but now the blood vessels are actually growing into the vitreous in the center part of the eye, which can lead to bleeding and scarring and retinal detachments. All right, so we're just evaluating the severity of the ROP. And then there's things like plus disease, which is a measure of how tortuous the vessels are. And so it's all staged, like stage three with plus disease, and certain clock hours, how many clock hours are involved with the ROP. It's very complicated, but also very well studied. The protocols for this are very tightly held, okay? For good reason, because we're talking about lifelong vision here. We're talking about and why this is such a difficult thing to do, that only so many, not even every pediatric ophthalmologist does this. Because the decision to treat an infant or not treat can have lifelong consequences. You can save a patient's eye, you can save the baby's vision, or you can not. And it's very challenging. Sometimes it's a judgment call, and the doctors who do this are very, very good at it, because they do a lot of it. And by the way, hospitals, they pay a lot of money for this service too. Because it's a very high level type of treatment here. And so usually it's like contracts, the hospital contracts with the practice or with specific ophthalmologists. This is also, by the way, an area of very high litigation, probably the highest litigation in the US in ophthalmology would be ROP. Because if despite your best efforts as an ophthalmologist, if the little baby does end up going blind, that can be determined years and years later. So in some states, you're subject to litigation. And so which is probably why it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone, but it can be very rewarding, because you can really save vision in these little babies. There's a whole, as far as treatment, let's talk about treatment, shall we? This is a treatment I've seen done, but I've done types of this treatment, because some of the treatment involves like cryotherapy. And so that was actually the first treatment that was ever described for ROP was cryotherapy. You figure out where the avascular retina is, and you put like liquid nitrogen a little probe on the retina, and you basically destroy that area, and that prevents abnormal blood vessels from growing in that avascular retina, which can lead to retinal detachments and things. So you're, it's the treatment is basically destroying that area that's what it does. It prevents the extra retinal vascularization, which is made up of fragile, not great blood vessels, right? So cryotherapy was the first treatment that was described. And I believe it's still done, but there's other treatments that have come up. There's just conventional laser treatment. Pew, 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 pew. We do a lot of lasers in ophthalmology. It's one of the fun parts. That's why retina surgeons love what they do. They get to shoot so many lasers. I get a couple different lasers I get to do, but they do a lot more. So shout out those retina doctors with their lasers. They're fancy lasers. And so that's really been the mainstay of this disease for a long time, as far as treatment goes, is cryotherapy, laser, basically destroying that avascular retina, that problematic retina, to try to stem the tide of progression of this disease. Okay. And by the way, just because an infant has retinopathy of prematurity doesn't mean they have to get treated. That's part of the judgment call of this disease, determining, do we treat or do we not treat? Or do we maybe let the eye develop, let the eye continuing develop under these awesome protocols and NICU with oxygen and when to oxygenate, when not to oxygenate, and eventually allow that eye to try to develop on its own normally, which can happen. And so it's that judgment call. But whenever treatment is decided, when the ROP disease is severe enough, you got to start treatment, and you got to start it pretty quick, like within, 24, 48, 72 hours, somewhere within days, you got to get treatment started. And so, cryotherapy, laser, and more recently, there have been studies that have looked at using anti-VEGF, because VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor, is thought to be involved in these abnormal blood vessel growth seen in ROP and also other diseases like proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which we already use anti-VEGF agents to treat. And so there have been some studies looking at using anti-VEGF in addition to laser. I'll be honest, I don't know. I'm not going to speak on what treatment is recommended. It's probably very specific to the patient. And I am not super up to date in literature on this topic, which is probably not something you even want to hear about. You don't want me throwing out p-values during these conversations we have, you guys. Don't do that eyeball at the tip of the week. Don't ask Dr. Glockenflecken to tell you anything about p-values. All right. I'll throw out some data if I really need to. Right. But especially in a situation like this, ROP treatment options, I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm not going to give you any kind of recommendations. I'm just going to tell you what the treatments are. All right. How about that? We'll stick to that. Don't do that eyeball tip of the week. That was kind of a lame one, but it is what it is. All right. So we talked about, potential complications from having this disease, retinal detachments, which when that happens in a young eye, in anybody, but particularly in an infant and a baby, it can be very difficult to treat, requiring multiple surgeries, filling the eye with silicone oil and all kinds of stuff. And very frequently you end up with terrible scarring and severely limited vision. So if ROP progresses to a retinal detachment stage, those later stages, outcome is pretty poor and certainly, severely vision limiting, unfortunately. And these kids, they have to be followed up pretty frequently. They're being seen, especially if they're getting treatment, they're being seen every like 3 days for a while. And then slowly that's spaced out the older they get and the more stable, hopefully, the disease can be. but it's just a very, very challenging disease. And I just, huge shout out to the physicians who do it, because we need that. And there's, just like a lot of pediatric subspecialties, there's a bit of a crisis for pediatric ophthalmologists. Like, we don't have enough. We don't have enough that are going into it. As usual, most of these things are about money. They get paid less than most other ophthalmologists. And it's, and maybe it depends on where you're working and the nature of your job, but we just don't, their pediatrics is underrepresented in ophthalmology, even to the point where now the world of ophthalmology is thinking about having a pathway for pediatricians, like those who do pediatric residency, to go and do a pediatric ophthalmology fellowship, which I get it. I get it. I get why, because you're starving for pediatric ophthalmologists. This is a legit crisis in my field. But man, that sounds really hard. Because as we've already talked about, remember, ophthalmology is an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. All right. And you're now going to ask those who are trained in pediatrics to go to not just the island, but try to get into the fortress on that island of pediatrics in ophthalmology. And so you're like, it feels like skipping a huge step, which is just getting to that island and figuring out how to navigate and where and how to survive on berries and fauna. And figure out what's poison and what's not poison. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. You got the analogy barely works, but you guys get what I'm saying. It would be very challenging to ask pediatricians to jump into a pediatric ophthalmology fellowship without that foundation of ophthalmology knowledge. So maybe that means doing an extra year of just ophthalmology. And then you go into pediatric. I don't know how it would work. I don't think this is something that's probably close to being enacted. It's just, I know the conversations have been had in certain circles in ophthalmology. So anyway, a little drama in the world of ophthalmology there. But I'll wrap that up here. That is retinopathy of prematurity for you. A very basic level. There's a lot more to get into. Absolutely. You know, if you're interested, I recommend going. You can find a lot of information about ROP on the American Academy of Ophthalmology website. Also, as always, shout out to irounds.org, which is from the University of Iowa. Great information resource on ophthalmology, all ophthalmology topics, including ROP. That's it. So thank you all for listening. This has been Knock Knock Eye. Special thanks to the producers, Shanti Brook, Rob Goldman, Aaron Corney, editor and engineer Jason Portiz. Our music is by Omer Benzvi. Let me know. Give us some feedback. All right. What topics do you want to hear next? I've got a whole list going. So I'm listening to that. I'm paying attention. Let me know what you want to hear about. What questions do you have about your eyeballs? Do you wonder why when you rub your eye, you can kind of, like, you get little sparkles everywhere? Or why you sneeze some of us sneeze when we look at a light? Or do you want to have questions about your glasses prescription? Or this eye drop that somebody recommended to you? Is that legit? I don't know. Whatever you got, I'm your guy. I'll answer it. All right. Thanks, everybody. This has been a Human Content production. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye. Human Content.